Hello and welcome to Learning Digital Photography. I'm your host, Jason Anderson, and this is episode number 16. On this week's episode, I'm going to talk to you about the Lens Baby Composer. This is an interesting lens I'm looking forward to adding to my gear bag. I'm going to tell you why. Also up this week, I'm going to talk to you about a recent photo shoot I went on out in El Dorado State Park. This is a park right outside Boulder, Colorado. I'm going to share with you my experiences from going on that photo shoot. And I'll round things out with some photo news, tidbits, and information I've picked up off the internet and from my own photo magazines and reading. And of course, I'll round things out with the listener questions and answers and your photo tip of the week. Thanks for tuning in, and now, on with the show. Starting off the show this week, I'd like to talk to you about the Lens Baby Composer. This is a really cool lens put out by the folks over at Lens Baby, and on their site they describe this as a selective focus SLR lens. And what that means, to me anyway, is that this is a lens designed for SLR cameras, so when you can interchange your lenses in and out, you can put this Lens Baby Composer on there. And because it's selective focus, what it means, to me anyway, is that you can adjust the focus of this lens so that only one portion of your image is in focus and the rest of it is all blurred out, or at least it fades into blur. And what this presents, for me anyway, what it sounds like it can do for me, is if I want to point people to one specific portion of an image that I've captured, this will allow me to do that so that other objects that appear in that same plane of view or on that same plane of focus, this lens will allow me to blur those portions that I don't want viewers to keep looking at, where it will focus them just towards that one point. And it sounds like it can offer a lot of creative opportunities for me. I'm very excited about adding this to my gear bag, and I wanted to share that excitement with you and talk to you about the unique opportunities that putting a lens like this in your gear bag can offer. And the other thing that's really cool about this is not only am I excited about getting this lens, but in talking with the folks over at Personal Life Media and with Lens Baby, it turns out they're willing to share this excitement too by giving the listeners an opportunity to get a free macro conversion lens. And you can attach this to the composer and on your camera so that you can get really up close and you can get some great macro shots and still keep that selective focus aspect available. So if you like doing macro work, or if you like doing landscape work, or if you're interested in doing anything with selective focus in camera so you don't have to go mess with it post-processing, this sounds like a great opportunity. I'm very excited. I'm looking forward to getting this lens so much so I can take it out and play around and really get creative and get more abstract and capture new ideas and new visions that I have. This lens will let me do that, and I'm very excited about it. I wanted to share that excitement with you. If you're interested in the details on the macro lens and how to get that for free, go over to personallifemedia.com/lensbaby. They've got a dedicated page set up that can tell you how to get that free macro lens. But seriously, even if you don't want the macro lens, look at the composer, because this is a really, really, really cool lens. I am so excited to getting this in my gear bag. I can't even begin to tell you. But it's called the Lens Baby Composer. Go to lensbaby.com if you want to look at that, or if you want to get the free macro lens, and that's like a $60 value, and you can get that for free. So if you want to get that, go to personallifemedia.com/lensbaby and check that out, because you can get that macro lens for free if you're going to buy the composer anyway. I'm all about getting things free. I'm assuming most of my listeners are all about getting things for free. If you want to get a macro lens for free, go check this out over at personallifemedia.com. It sounds like a great opportunity. So coming up right after this break, I'm going to talk to you about a recent photo shoot I went on. And actually, there were a couple times on this photo shoot where I really wish I had the composer. So make sure you come back after the break so you can hear about that photo shoot and how the Lens Baby would have been a great addition to my gear bag for this particular shoot. So I'll be back right after this. And welcome back. Now I'm going to be talking to you about a photo shoot I went on recently, just this last weekend, over at El Dorado State Park. This is a park right outside of Boulder, Colorado. And I went out there with a bunch of photo friends that I had met through a site called meetup.com. This is a really cool site where you can go and you can find opportunities to do activities and actually meet people and go out and do things with people that share similar interests. Photography, of course, is a big one on the meetup site. And I met some people a while back. This was actually through the Scott Kelby Photo Walk contest that was, I think, in September of last year. And this has spawned this new group that we have here in Denver. It was really cool. We went out to the El Dorado State Park. And the reason why I wanted to talk to you about the El Dorado Park outing is because I've talked a lot in the past about checklists and about preparing for shoots and maintenance schedules and things of that nature. And something new came up this weekend that I learned about that I thought you might be interested in, and that's planning for weather. And the reason why I'm mentioning planning for weather and to dress accordingly is because I did not. The night before the photo shoot, this took place on a Saturday morning. We were getting there early in the morning. I looked at the weather, and the weather said that there was going to be some light snow, and that it was the temperature was going to start in the 20s or 30s and get up to the 50s over the course of the day. So in prepping for the shoot, I kept thinking 50 degrees, 50 degrees. What I didn't take into account was that it was going to start in the 20s, and that we were going to be in a canyon in the mountains where sun can't really heat things up. So when I get up Saturday morning, I debate putting on a pair of thermals. And I said, no, I'm not going to put on these thermals because it'll get super hot and I don't like being hot, so I'm not going to put the thermals on. And I go out on this shoot and I get cold. I get pretty cold because not only am I down in this valley, but I'm also lying down in snow so I can get up close and personal on some shots and so I can get wide-angle shots of these creeks and mountain views and things of that nature. So I'm lying down in snow and I'm getting wet and I'm getting cold and I didn't have a change of clothes to change into. So it's kind of an FYI and kind of an inside perspective now on planning your clothing for a photo shoot. Two things to consider. If you're going to be in high altitudes, dress warmly. And number two, take a change of clothes with you. These are two things that I'm going to do now whenever I go out shooting in the mountains. Take a change of clothes and also dress more warmly than I would for other areas, because when you're out in the mountains, you really can get into situations where you're not going to have snow, or excuse me, you're not going to have sun that can warm you up as much as you would in other areas. So those are two little tidbits of the photo shoot there. The other thing I noticed is in doing the photo shoot, I saw a lot of opportunities to implement selective focus. And these are things I did not have in my gear bag. As I mentioned in the last segment, I'm looking forward to getting a Lens Baby Composer. And nature, panoramas, landscape photography is a particular area that you wouldn't think you could do selective focus or utilize a Lens Baby Composer in. But I saw a lot of times where I thought that, man, it would be really cool if I had that lens right now. If I could just capture the peak of that tree with the snow in there and the backlight of the sun and blur everything else out, that would make a great photo. And I tried to do it several different ways, and I just didn't really have a way to do it in camera. If I'd had the Lens Baby Composer, I could have captured a lot more shots from a creative perspective that I otherwise was unable to capture. I tried capturing them and post-processing them in software, and it just didn't come out with the vision that I had planned. So that's another reason why I'm looking forward to getting the Lens Baby Composer in my gear bag, because it will give me an opportunity to get more creative with my photos. So those are two things that I wanted to share with you from this last outing. I'll go ahead and post some shots up to the blog. So if you want to stop over at canonblogger.com, the show notes and a couple photos will be there. I'll see if I can't add some photos on here at Learning Digital Photography on the blog entry there. But if you do want to see the pictures, I know I'll have some up on the blog tomorrow, so do feel free to check those out at your leisure. Coming up after the break, I'm going to take a look at some listener questions. I'm also going to talk about some photo news and events. A lot going on with copyright recently. There's been a couple news stories that are relating to copyright. So you're going to want to tune in and get the Learning Digital Photography perspective on what copyright means to you and what all is involved with copyright. So stay tuned, and I'll be back right after this. Welcome back to Learning Digital Photography. For the news items this week, I'd like to take a look at copyright. This is something that has been in the news recently in two major instances. First with Facebook, and second with the Obama campaign poster. These have been some evolving stories, and for those of you that haven't been keeping up on the internet news from blogs and community forums, things like that, basically what's been going on is the poster that had been used for Barack Obama's presidential campaign bid, that was, a lot of the posters were based off an image that was then converted to the red, white, and blue painted version that we've all become familiar with. And what had happened was the Associated Press had a stringer photographer that had taken the picture, and then an artist picked up the picture off the Associated Press and did their conversion on it. Well, the Associated Press then turned around and said, hey, you can't use that. We own that picture that was taken by one of our photographers. And then in turn after that, the photographer was found and has come forward and said, actually, technically, even though I was a stringer for the AP, I never signed off on the copyright release, so technically these are mine. And the interesting thing is that the photographer doesn't want any financial compensation. All he wants is the recognition. And from what I understand, he has been getting quite a bit of recognition, and he has been selling a lot more work, due in no small part to the attention that he's gotten over this hoopla. So that's an interesting development, and kind of part and parcel with that is a photograph that was taken off the Time magazine cover, and there's some question as to whether or not there's copyright issues involved with that as far as who owns the picture, who has the rights to the picture, and who is not allowed to use the picture that was used on the Time magazine cover. So you've got the Time magazine cover, you've got the Associated Press, you've got a graphic designer that converted a picture, and you've got the photographer that took the original picture. And all of these different things are swirling about over this big question of who has the copyright, who owns what rights do they have, what rights do other people have, does compensation need to be made? A lot of interesting stuff going on there. And then in conjunction with that was a recent change that Facebook had to its terms of service. They changed their terms of service, which basically allowed them to say, well, which basically said, actually, that even if you terminate your account with Facebook, they still own the right to the photographs, to notes, to anything that you have posted on there in perpetuity, which means forever. Basically, trying to exert their influence or exert ownership over something that technically they didn't own. And there was a big old stink about it, and a lot of people in the blogosphere and a lot of people online aired their gripes and their grievances and complained about it in no small measures. And now Facebook has reverted back to its initial terms of service, which basically said that by posting stuff to Facebook, you are giving them the right to basically host that content for you until you close your account. So when people close their account, they still own the copyright and they still own all the permission to anything they published on Facebook. And all of these issues that are surrounding copyright ownership simply fall back on the underlying theme that if you want to protect your copyright and you want to make sure that you have ownership of your own images, two key things that you have to understand. Number one is that as soon as you press the shutter, as soon as you take a picture, you own that picture. You have the copyright on that picture. So you don't have to register anything with any office anywhere to have copyright or have ownership of an image. But, and this is a big but, there's a huge caveat here, you cannot claim any damages or get punitive damages or get any kind of payment for someone using your image unless you register your images with the copyright office. And that's a big caveat, because if you don't register your images with the copyright office, you may not be entitled to any kind of compensation for people that take your picture without your permission. And when I say take in that aspect, I mean use images you've created without your permission. So it just falls back on this underlying premise that if you really are concerned about managing your image libraries and making sure that images are used in a manner of speaking that you are comfortable with, the only way to do that, the best way to do that actually, I should say, is to register with them with the copyright office. When you look at services that are out there, like Facebook, like Flickr, and other online methods of sharing images, people talk about the Creative Commons and how the Creative Commons is this fine thing where it can be used for public use as long as you don't alter, and all these terms and conditions that you can apply or not apply to your images may work. They're still under the larger umbrella of copyright. And if you don't register your images with the Copyright Office, technically you still have no copyright protection. So it's just a point that I kind of wanted to hammer home with the listening audience, because you really do need to register your images. It's cheap, it's easy. The Copyright Office now has online submission methods. I think it's $45 to do it online. You can do it with a disc or a DVD for $35. You can register hundreds of thousands of images for a simple fee annually of $35. So go through your image libraries, make sure you get things submitted to the Copyright Office so that you can retain ownership and management of your own images. And it's just better in the long run to protect you, to protect your images, and everything that's associated with them. So that's the recommendation for this week, is to make sure you register your images with the Copyright Office. Now, on the flip side of that, I'd like to go back and look at these outlets like Facebook, like Flickr, and other online venues where you can share your images. And they're always changing their terms of service, and you always want to be aware of the terms of service that are associated with these websites. But I've come across two websites recently, where they freely acknowledge and accept that when you share images within their community or on their space of the internet, you still retain ownership, and they respect copyright, and you retain your copyright, and they'll never try to do a rights grab or anything like that. And these two sites, that one of which I just found out about this weekend, but anyway, these two sites are usefilm.com, usefilm.com is one website, and the other website is Photoblur, FOTOBLUR.com. And these are two really cool websites. They're all about the photographs. They don't talk a lot about post-processing, although there are forms that can do that. But the photo galleries, where you publish your photos or you share your images with the larger community, are very cool because they're all about the photographs. You retain your copyright. You can get feedback. You can get comments. You can get dialogues going. And one of the special features that I like about both these sites is that you're limited to one photo per day. And actually, on the one site, you can pay a $25 donation to get permission to do 3 image uploads per day. But that makes things so much, even at 3 images per day, that makes it much more manageable to view new content, because you don't get people that are posting 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 images online just to say, hey, what do you think? Without the individual going through some kind of whittling or image management process where you're only posting your best work. And that's why I like UseFilm and Photoblur, because it really does force you to critique your own images before posting, because you only get one per day. And when you only get one per day, it kind of forces you to go through that self-critique, self-analysis, and to be honest and objective about it before posting, because you really do only want to post your best work. So those are the two websites and little news nuggets that I have for this week to share with the listening audience. And that is, number one, to protect your copyright. Number two, to be aware of things like Facebook and Flickr, because they don't use copyright. They don't acknowledge copyright. They can change their terms of service at any point in time. Flickr already strips out metadata from your images. So those are things that you want to be aware of if you're sharing images online. And if you want to look for alternative methods of sharing imagery online where your copyright is retained and protected, two websites are usefilm.com and photoblur.com. I'll go ahead and post links to those two respective websites in the show notes and here at Personal Life Media. So do feel free to check those out at your leisure. Coming back after this last break, I'm going to take a couple listener questions, and I will sign off with the final photo tip of the week. I'll be right back, right after this. Welcome back to the final segment for Learning Digital Photography. And our first question for the day comes to us from Chris in El Paso. Chris writes in asking about the hyperfocal distance on lenses, what it is and how to determine that. Chris, a great resource I'm going to refer you to is dofmaster.com. That's dofmaster.com. They've got some great charts and some great explanations there. But for a quick explanation, and I could go into more detailed one, but for a quick one, I'm just going to refer you to their website and their definition. How they define hyperfocal distance is the point of focus where everything from half that distance to infinity falls within your depth of field. So if you think about your depth of field, that's the range of sharpness that you have in an image. So if you want a certain range to be in focus and you want that range to go to infinity, then what you need to do is you need to determine your hyperfocal distance. And your hyperfocal distance will be a function of three things: the focal length of your lens, your f-stop, and your circle of confusion. So there's a lot of technical numbers involved here, but again, over at the DOF Master website, if you go there and then go to /charts.html, they actually have a chart there that will show you what the hyperfocal distance is for a range of lenses, a range of f-stops, and assuming a circle of confusion of 0.03 millimeters. And that, again, I know it's getting into really technical details here, but when you look at the hyperfocal distance of these lenses, keep in mind it's half that distance. So if you see a lens has a hyperfocal distance of 17 feet, half that distance is 8.5 feet. So that means anything 8.5 feet in front of you, out to infinity, is going to be in focus. So hopefully that can help you see why this would be useful in things like landscape pictures and portrait pictures and things of that nature. And for example, on the website, if you look at dofmaster.com, they say the hyperfocal distance of 17 feet is applicable to a 50 millimeter lens at f16. So if you've got your lens set to 50 millimeters and your aperture set to f16, your hyperfocal distance is 17 feet, which means anything at 8.5 feet out to infinity is going to be sharp. And that is really useful feature to understand about photography, or a useful concept, I should say, to understand about photography, especially if you're into landscapes and or portraiture work, just because that can really be crucial in getting everything tack sharp. So to answer your question, hyperfocal distance, anything from half that distance out to infinity is sharp. How do you determine that? I would recommend the DOF Master chart. So thank you to Chris for writing in and inquiring about that. And again, I'm going to refer you to dofmaster.com to get more detailed information. You can even download that chart from their website and print it out to keep with you, because that is a good resource to refer to. The next listener question comes to us from Kristen right here in Colorado. Kristen writes in to ask whether or not the auto white balance feature is something that can be useful when shooting photography in changing light conditions. In my opinion, Kristen, auto white balance is something that I actually stay away from, especially when lighting conditions are changing rapidly. Usually what I'll do is I will set my auto white balance to something, anything actually, other than auto white balance, and just address it inside of the Adobe Camera Raw dialog for Photoshop or Lightroom, or whatever raw converter software you have. Because from the raw conversion software, you can identify a midpoint, something that's supposed to be absolutely neutral. And from that absolute neutral point, the photo software usually gets spot on what is absolute white and what is absolute black for the range of colors that you have in that image. So to answer your question, I don't really use the auto white balance feature. I don't like it. Sometimes your camera can get fooled. It's always best to use a white balance card or a gray card or something like that. But if you don't have a white card or a gray card with you, take it off of auto white balance and point it at something else. You can set custom white balances. You can also set to a specific Kelvin temperature on some of the more advanced cameras. I have that on my 40D. But auto white balance is something that you really do want to avoid. So thank you to Chris. Thank you to Kristen. I appreciate both of you writing in to ask questions from me over here at Learning Digital Photography. I will also have some of the answers to these questions and the links to resources to answer these questions over on the blog. So do stop over to canonblogger.com to get the show notes and more details and links that are applicable to this podcast. And for your photo tip of the week, I'm going to recommend that people take a look at Photomatix. Photomatix is a great piece of software that is very useful when addressing high dynamic range photography or HDR photography. In the past, I had used Photoshop to produce HDR photos. Just this last weekend, I had an opportunity to download Photomatix and start using it for my own work, and can see for myself that Photomatix is far superior to the native HDR processing that is available inside of Photoshop. So if you go to hdrsoft.com, you can download a trial copy of Photomatix and try it out for yourself. Very useful, very handy. It produced some great results for me from this photo shoot I had just this last weekend out at El Dorado. So that is your photo tip for the week, to check out Photomatix from hdrsoft.com. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. If anyone does have questions, comments, or suggestions that they'd like to hear me talk about on future episodes of Learning Digital Photography, feel free to email me. My address, as always, is jason@canonblogger.com. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you back here next week. Bye.